by the time the company got acquired, we had 5 million writers and 100 million monthly users.
I still vividly remember that there was one email I got during the early days of Wattpad. Pretty much brought me to tears. That was the moment when I became user obsessed.
How did you overcome that? Like, when you're encountering a lot of people who are naysayers.
Well, imagine the first naysayer was your spouse.
What would you attribute your success to?
So for me, I would say curiosity.
I distinctly remember like a year after we launched, I could count how many people on the platform and maybe two hands and our toes, you know. Not a single person wrote on the platform.
Welcome to The Moment, a new podcast by Canadian Business and Quill Podcasting. I'm one of your hosts, Jason Maganoy, the publisher of Canadian Business, and I'm co-hosting this podcast with Fatima Zaidi, the CEO and founder of Quill.
We're talking about the not-so-glamorous side of startup life, the moments we don't always get to hear about, the time when founders had to make a sharp pivot, start over from square one, or ditch an idea entirely. These are the real stories of what it takes to make it as an entrepreneur.
Each week, we're welcoming a new entrepreneur to talk about that moment where they were faced with giving up and powering through.
Subscribe and follow wherever you find your podcasts. Today, we're speaking with Eva and Alan Lau, co-founders of Two Small Fish Ventures. Alan is also the co-founder of Wattpad, a social storytelling and entertainment company. In 2021, Wattpad was acquired for a deal valued at over $600 million US dollars. Eva was instrumental in helping Wattpad grow in the early days, scaling it to millions of users around the globe. Since then, she's become a key figure in the Canadian entrepreneurship landscape, being involved in numerous accelerators and incubators. Today, she's one of the few women in Canada that's leading a venture capital fund.
Alan and Eva run Two Small Fish, an early stage venture capital fund, which invests in tech startups that will be disrupting their industries. At Two Small Fish, they set up founders for the best possible outcome because they believe that investing goes beyond simply writing a check. In addition to capital, they also offer mentorship and they also offer coaching. And this helps founders on their entrepreneurial journey.
Eva and Alan, thank you so much for being here. We're so thrilled to have you and welcome to The Moment.
Thanks for inviting us.
It's our pleasure to be here.
Amazing.
You know, The Moment is about a podcast where we're talking with founders like yourself to really discuss the entrepreneurial journey and really the good, bad, and ugly. The people that are tuning in every week are folks who are small business owners who are in the thick of it. People like myself. It's, you know, 4 years for Quill now, and it's always really inspiring to hear stories like yours. And, you know, we don't only want to hear the successful conversations. I mean, we know you two have made it. You're like the sort of beacon of light for people like myself, the light at the end of the tunnel that we aspire to reach. But I want to know, you know, you've both been involved in so many entrepreneurial ventures. Let's take it back to Wattpad for a second. Were there any moments at Wattpad where you were in the process of scaling and you both felt like, yes, we're going to make it? But I also want to understand if there were moments at Wattpad where you felt like maybe this isn't the idea and this is, you know, not going to work out. So I'll open the floor to you to hear your founder journey.
In the early days, because the community was very small, you're talking about maybe a few hundred writers at that time. For context, by the time the company got acquired, we had 5 million writers and 100 million monthly users. So yeah, a few hundred is like a small town. So I try to know everyone in the evening. I'll go around and, you know, at least look at people's profile. And there was one evening where, like, I just keep on going and going. There are probably thousands of writers by then and just keep on finding new writers. Just randomly. That was the aha moment. I guess the second aha moment a little bit later was we were swimming in data. We couldn't figure out what to do. That was 2012. We hired our first data scientist. His name is Brandon, and he taught us a then new technology called artificial intelligence. We became an AI company around that time, thanks to Brandon and he's one of the partners at Two Small Fish Ventures right now. Maybe I'll pass the mic to you to talk about some of the aha moments.
Well, certainly aha moments. I would say that I still vividly remember that there was one email I got during the early days of Wattpad, pretty much brought me to tears. and made me realize what we were doing was life-changing, and it cemented my obsession when it comes to being user-obsessed. I think it probably is around 2010. There was a woman in her early 20s. She wrote an email to me directly, and she said, Eva, throughout my high school years, my teacher told me that I would never be somebody. I would always be a C student, so I never tried. I never kind of even had the courage or aspiration to go into university or do something big. So when I stumbled upon Wattpad, at the time I had no money to buy books. So, you know, what's better to buy books? Maybe just read books for free on this online platform, and started to write her very own story. And by the time she wrote to me back then, 2010, 2011, she was telling me that she now had 50,000 people online waiting for her to write the next chapter and cheered for her every day. That to her was life-changing because she felt, I am valued. So fast forward, you know, I'm talking about like really fast forward, she actually became one of the New York Times bestseller.
What a curveball. I wasn't expecting that.
That was the moment when I became user-obsessed. That's exactly why, you know, how we built Wattpad in such a way that we want it to be an oasis on the internet. We want people to feel safe, to feel that they have a space to unleash their imagination, to be able to connect with the, you know, with their audience through stories. And I think even right now, whether you're reading a fiction or nonfiction, we find ourselves connect with others through stories anyway, right?
I love that, like hearing this story, like going back to this, you're ahead of your time. It seemed like you were like at the forefront of all types of really cool businesses that are the businesses that, like, so you're like, you're a community business, you're a user-generated content business, you're an AI business, you're an IP business, you're a marketplace, you're all of these things. So when you were doing this, when you're building this, you're checking profiles every day, like, what was this doing for you, like, on your journey? Like, were you getting better as an entrepreneur as you were going? You're getting bombarded by millions of points of data. Are you just overwhelmed? Are you getting better? Are you rocking it? Are you in the wilderness, lost more than ever? Like, what was happening to you at that moment in your journey?
Well, you know, when we started the company, YouTube was 1 year old. Facebook was a 200-person company. So, like, user-generated content was... this term was not even coined at that time.
Yeah. What I love, though, about like, because like you're at the forefront of all these things, you're kind of seeing the future. People don't see the future with you. So when you're in a room with someone being like, hey, this is the future, and I don't believe you. I'm like, what are you talking about? What is user-generated content? I don't understand what this is. How did you overcome that? Like, when you're encountering a lot of people who are naysayers on your journey, how did you turn them into evangelists for?
Well, imagine the first naysayer was your spouse. Right. So when Alan first started Wattpad, the first naysayer was me. I was like 2006 when iPhone was not even there. He kept pushing this Motorola flip phone to me, say, read on this phone. I'm like, are you nuts? Like, why would people want to read it, you know, on here, right? And how do you convert a naysayer to be a let's do it, right? I think there are a lot of art and a lot of trust and a lot of risk-taking attitude that you have to take. So I think, you know, what we were very lucky was, you know, obviously when Alan and Ivan started the company, back then when I was the first naysayer, they were very committed. They were very convicted. They said, you know what, let's give it a shot. When they were hustling, you know, they converted me as a yay-sayer because they highlight to me, you know, highlighted to me what were the risks that they were facing and, you know, what we're, you know, we are risking. And then even eventually when I joined the company, the team always, you know, sit together and reflect together. What were the battles that we're dealing with? What were the challenges? And what are the options that we have? And we try to create those optionalities for us as well. So I would say that try not to be a sitting duck. Create optionality for yourself.
One thing that really made me start paying attention to Wattpad in the early days is how diverse and well-represented the team, the executive team was. It was at a time where the tech industry especially was very homogenous looking. And so I'm curious, Was that intentional? Did you just happen to find the best people that were most qualified for the job? And how much of the success do you attribute to the diverse workforce that you brought together? And, you know, including your wife, who was so instrumental in scaling to millions of people around the globe.
One of the most important decisions we made was to be a global company. I think that it was, in a way, in hindsight, of course it was so obvious, but at that time it wasn't that obvious. And I still distinctly remember vividly when we first launched on day one, we already supported the key languages like French or Spanish or Portuguese, and we actually attracted Vietnamese writers first, and then Filipino writers second, before the English community took off. So in a way, you can view this as, just more shots on goal. The more shots on goal you have, then you have higher chance to be successful. And why this is important, because once we realize, wow, we are building a global company, then we realize, well, perhaps the people that we hire, they have to mirror the community that we have. Otherwise, they would not have intrinsically, they might not have the knowledge, they might not have the skill, they might not even have the know-how or cultural, similarities to deal with that. So that became, hiring with diversity in mind became a very important pillar of how we do things in the company.
Going back to what we were saying about you being all these things, right? And all these different data points. And you said, when we launched, like one of the things that I always struggle with at work, we try to be entrepreneurial at work. So we'll launch something and, I'll press the button. Okay, we are live and nothing is happening. Like, we're in gigantic trouble. It took 15 minutes. When you launched, how did you know you were on the right track? Like, what does it look like when Wattpad is live and it is happening? The marketplace is being formed on both sides. But what did it look like? What did it feel like? How did you know that this was actually a thing?
A year after we launched, we had not a lot of people on the platform. Nothing happened. This is the truth. I distinctly remember, like, a year after we launched, my co-founder and Ivan and I, we were depressing. We were sitting in a restaurant trying to figure out what to do, because I could count how many people on the platform and maybe two hands and our toes, a few hundred, maybe at most 1,000 readers. And not a single person wrote on the platform. It took almost 2 years before the first writer came. That was a really, really dark moment, I have to say. We almost like pulled the plug. I guess in that conversation, we almost gave up. But one of us, I can't remember, it's me or Ivan, maybe we both came to this realization, because no one used the platform. Our hosting cost was like $5 per month. And so one of us joked that, oh, we are $5 away from break even. And okay, well, let's continue. It costs us nothing, right? So in a way, that's the optionality. The point that we made earlier, what's the worst case? We lose another $5 next month, right? Let's continue. And then we, of course, $5 is not enough to feed one family, let alone two. So we were doing some odd jobs, contract jobs elsewhere to keep us alive. But we kept the Wattpad product alive until we slowly improved that in the evening, slowly improved that over the weekend, and eventually we found product market fit.
And I would like to add that, even later on when we find product market fit, when the first writer came on, and then later on grew from one writer to two writer, and then, multi-hundred, multi-thousands, that optionality mindset, that, create optionality for us mindset, continue to fuel ourselves in terms of embracing what you've talked about, the different frontier in technology. In essence, it was our I would say, ambition to push ourselves and innovate and not be complacent right. with where we were.
So you're both co-founders of Two Small Fish Ventures. Eva, this is a question for you. I'm very curious. I've heard that you are great at giving the very direct, candid feedback. How do you decide when you're going to or why you're going to invest in a founder or entrepreneur? Like, what are the skills that you're looking for in either the founder or what sort of traits are you looking for beyond the, you know, basic financials and business model? I'm curious, like, how do you invest in an entrepreneur?
The type of founders that we're looking for particularly are those founders that are not shy to, to criticism. Because for us, me and Alan, you know, we are very different. So many times he came on and I'd be like, just like Wattpad, I want to build this out. I'm like, what are you talking about? This is silly. So for me, he heard my criticism, but at the same time, not shy to kind of explain to me, but at the same time, understood where I came from. That dialogue, it's exactly what I'm looking for in a founder. I think it's, you know, what I'm saying is from the bottom of my heart. I just want them to kind of like understand, you know, more like a 360. So that person be able to take that criticism, but also at the same time, you know, have that thoughtfulness of taking that as an input and process it and find that nugget that's useful for them. That's what is essential, to have that growth mindset. Because at the same time, once you have that mindset, you would know what kind of options are out there. It's just go back to the whole optionality mindset that I think founder has to have to build for themselves. You can ask Alan how he felt when I say, this is a silly idea.
99% of the VCs in San Francisco said no to me at one point, maybe no multiple times. So you, it's just back in life. You have to no is just normal.
Yeah. And I do think the American landscape is a lot more cutthroat. And here in Canada, we're conditioned to think that negative feedback or criticism is a bad thing. Whereas I've always thought of it as if people don't have negative criticisms on your work and are instead indifferent, that's arguably way worse because you can't iterate on indifferent.
At the end of the day, just like many other VCs, we see roughly 1,000 pitch decks per year through our inbox or in meetings. We invest in 5 to 7 or 8. It's less than 1%. And for the 99% of the people that we say no to, at least they learn something. Exactly. At least they have some takeaway. It's much more valuable to everyone.
It's the journey, not the destination.
Yeah, you know, seeing the future is our superpower. And the most important thing is when we look at an opportunity, will this company become a $1 billion or multi-billion dollar company in a decade plus? How much they made in the last 30 days might not be the good indicator of how big that opportunity eventually would become. Maybe 10 years ago, 15 years ago, 18 years ago now, when I started Wattpad, the answer was no. I believe many of the opportunities that the entrepreneurs were thinking were very, very small, not venture backable, right? But now this problem, if you call this a problem, is mostly behind us. Toronto is one of the largest tech ecosystems. And for an ecosystem of that scale, you need to have a lot of entrepreneurs like that, the multi-billion dollar kind of entrepreneurs, in order to support that scale.
My last question before we move on to the next section is really about, it's like actually a question that I borrow from How I Built This. So Guy Raz's podcast, and he asks every entrepreneur at the end of his show, his episode, this one question. And for years, I've been listening to this show and keeping tally of everyone's answers. And I'm really curious to ask you both. What would you attribute your success to? Wattpad, Two Small Fish Ventures, and generally all of your ventures. Do you think that it is luck and opportunity, or do you think it's a combination of other factors?
Yeah, let me answer in the Wattpad context first. I think luck or hard work or smartness or founder grit, these are false dichotomy. These are seemingly mutually exclusive choices, but you need almost all of them. You have to be, sometimes you have to be at the right place at the right time. And if you look at Wattpad, we were maybe a little bit ahead of the time, but guess what? When iPhone came out, it turbocharged what we did. That was purely luck, I would say. I did not know Steve Jobs was thinking about iPhone at that time. At the same time, I would say we also had the foresight, the mobile reading capability. The screen size have been improving every year. If you look at each model, it's the capability is better and better and better. So if you extrapolate, absolutely something like the iPhone would come out. So if I fully attribute that to luck, it's also perhaps maybe too humble, you know? Yeah. There's some truth to that, that we saw the future.
So for me, I would say curiosity, right? Because I think curiosity, it seems to be a very simple word saying, oh, I'm curious, let me learn more. But, you know, if you unpack that word, it actually has more than that, because curiosity rooted in, you know, your own humbleness, meaning that I actually don't understand, I don't know about it, let me learn about it. Very full of themselves, that kind of a person may not necessarily have that curiosity because, oh, I know how this works, but do you really know how this works, right?
Now let's move on to the next section, which is called the Founder's Toolbox. The Founder's Toolbox is where we learn and distill the lessons that these entrepreneurs have learned over the course of their journeys and get a sense of some tips and resources that help them stay inspired and motivated. When you're on your journey, do you have any resources that you point to that you're like, this is just really, really good to keep me motivated, keep me sane, keep me balanced? Do you have any tools that you can share that can help entrepreneurs keep going?
All entrepreneurs, I would say 100% of the entrepreneurs, they would hit rock bottom at one point in the journey, at least once, maybe multiple times. So the first realization is you are not alone. You are hitting rock bottom right now, but trust me, it's not the first time in the universe. Leverage people who are ahead of you. Mm-hmm. Leverage people who are more experienced than you. Leverage people who have hit more rock bottom low points than you, but they still stay alive. I could testify that I was a very different person a decade ago, and I absolutely was a different person 2 decades ago. So I believe for those founders who are struggling, keep these two in mind.
We always end our interviews with a rapid fire round because we want to get to know both of you on a more personal level. All right. So, Eva, please tell us, what's one vice you wish you could give up?
Well, Alan asked me to say shopping, but I'm not going to say shopping. I would say, peanut M&M.
Oh, but they're so good.
They're so good.
They're so good.
So good.
I would say I'm so physically lazy. I wish I stare less on my screen.
What's one thing that people don't know about you?
I was a ballerina when I was young.
Oh, wow. I feel like ballerinas inherently know how to be graceful through life. So that does make sense.
I'm a super boring person.
Boring is a matter of perspective, I would say. What's one thing you wish you knew at 19?
That, taking risk is actually a lot of fun.
Network. It's about the people around you, especially people ahead of you, people better than you, and how much you can learn from them and leverage from them.
What's one thing you wish you could change about Canada?
Take more risk.
Take more risk. We are so risk adverse.
I know, it's true. What's one thing that always makes you laugh?
Basically, watching my kids, kind of being comfortable doing silly things. However old they are, will always bring me a laugh and a smile.
Okay, if it's not my children, it's people who have all those subtle humor. When they tell a joke, they don't laugh. You have to think. You have to think twice. Oh, is it a joke? That would make me really laugh.
What is the hardest thing about growing your company?
basically push yourself into uncomfortable zone yourself, meaning that there are things that you are actually unnatural of, but you just have to suck it up and to do it.
The hardest thing about growing Wattpad is my own personal growth. Every year, every 2 years, I really have to transform myself and learn new skills that I didn't even know I need to learn or feel very uncomfortable learning, and I have to push the boundary to learn. Otherwise, the company, I would be left behind by the company.
And lastly, how would you describe living in Canada in 3 words?
I would say free, empowering, and friendly.
Well-balanced and friendly.
Well, thank you so much, Ava and Alan, for joining us. Such an honor sitting across from you. I've honestly admired both of you for a very long time. And more than anything, I love the relationship dynamic between the two of you. It's like the perfect partnership for two founders, I would say. So thank you for being here. Thank you for sharing your advice. It's a pleasure to sit across from you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for the opportunity.
There are so many incredible moments in Eva and Alan's journey, but the one that really stands out to me is when they both identified that users were organically coming to the platform and they felt for the first time their product was actually filling a need. The other thing that really stands out to me is how incredible their partnership and relationship is. Eva's ability to give Alan transparent, constructive, honest feedback from the early days is likely one of the biggest contributors to Wattpad's success.
So, Fatima, Wattpad was at the forefront of a lot of different types of businesses, and Quill is at the forefront of podcasting. In a way, it's like you're new, you're still like going for it, you're like a pioneer. So my question is, what advice do you have for people who are breaking into or trying to establish in new industries?
I distinctly remember in this conversation, Alan talks about how being in a new industry feels like you're pushing water uphill. And that I feel like is a very accurate analogy or metaphor. There are pros and cons, I would say, to being an early adopter in a new industry. The pro is definitely being first to market. When we launched Quill, we were one of a handful of branded podcast agencies. And fast forward 5 years, there's a bajillion out there. And we really had that advantage of being one of the first to market and specializing within the industry. It's also really fun and exciting setting the framework and the infrastructure and getting to decide the direction the industry gets to head. But I will say the challenges are that you have no data points to compare it to, no framework whatsoever. And a lot of your time in the early days is spent on educating your clients. On the early days, all of my conversations with brands were about why they should start a podcast. 5 years later, it's never about why they should start a podcast. They know they should be starting a podcast. So definitely pros and cons. I think it's just a different type of challenge. So Jason, you're very well versed in the Canadian entrepreneurship space. You live and breathe this world. When we were talking to Eva and Alan, I think it reminded me of the very real challenges that entrepreneurs face when they're raising capital. So I'm curious from your perspective, what are the challenges that Canadian entrepreneurs specifically face when raising capital here in Canada?
Yes, I mean, that seems to be a common thread with a lot of the entrepreneurs that I speak to. It's just, it's hard to raise money here. Just like the amount of stories that are like, I'm 0 for 108 in terms of pitches. And you're like, okay. So there's this whole thing about like, one, it's hard. Second, it's sad sometimes when you hear about an incredible Canadian company that got raised money outside of this country. So, you know, obviously it's really, really great to see people like Alan Neva who are investing in Canadian entrepreneurs here, and they're rigorous about it. And they're looking for those leadership verticals that Canadians hopefully will have a leadership role in the future, like future of innovation in globally. So the only thing I'm noticing is that it's really, really hard. Sometimes they find success elsewhere, which allows them to find success here. And my hope is that more Canadian VCs will support Canadian entrepreneurs.
Thank you for listening to The Moment. We strive to bring you something different each week because we don't need another podcast with a bunch of finance bros sitting around their microphones talking about dropshipping. Just like the founders we interview each week, we're here for the real talk. Want more? There's an easy way to make sure you don't miss a new episode drop. Subscribe and follow wherever you find your podcasts.
But don't stop listening yet. Please rate the podcast, review the podcast. We'd love to get the word out. So please let us know what you think. And don't forget to share this episode so that we can learn more from these incredible entrepreneurs and their stories from the moment everything changed.